Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Innovating to meet changing educational needs is at the heart of any university's purpose. The University of Wisconsin Stevens Point has always followed this path, evolving from a small teacher's college to a state university as the local demand for higher education expanded during the past century. Now, as we approach our 125th anniversary, we must recognize that central and northern Wisconsin have changed since the 1970s, when UW-Stevens Point last expanded. The signals are clear that we must become a new kind of regional university. These are the opening paragraphs of UW-Stevens Point's Point Forward proposal unveiled on November 12th. The proposal reorganizes the campus's four existing colleges into three interdisciplinary schools. These schools pair liberal arts with specific career-focused professional majors. The plan recenters the university's general degree requirements around a humanities-based core curriculum. It also creates two new administrative centers to support the new requirements, the Institute for the Wisconsin Idea and the Center for Critical Thinking. At the same time, the plan eliminates six majors, fewer than the 13 suggested in a March 2018 proposal. It also requires reductions in faculty and staff. The final plan must be in place by spring of 2019 to coincide with the submission of the next fiscal year's budget. The approval process includes submission to the university's Common Council and the UW Board of Regents. If approved, the first stages of this reorganization will be implemented by July of 2020. I'm Rick Ryer, in for Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we welcome Chancellor Bernie Patterson and Provost Greg Summers from the UW-Stevens Point to discuss the details and implications of the Point Forward proposal. We also want to hear from you. Call in with your comments and questions for our guests at 800-780-9742. Let's quickly introduce our guests. Chancellor Bernie Patterson has led UW-Stevens Point since 2010, guiding the strategic plan and vision of the university while strengthening ties with local and regional communities. Previously, he was the provost and vice president for academic affairs at Oklahoma City University, a dean at Georgia College and State University, and a faculty member of Valdosta State University. He holds a bachelor's degree from Missouri Western State University, a PhD and Master of Arts in Criminology from the State University of New York at Albany, and an educational specialist degree and a Master of Science from the University of Central Missouri. Greg Summers, the Provost and Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, joined UW-Stevens Point as a faculty member in the Department of History and International Studies in 2001. His research and teaching interests are in U.S. environmental history and the history of technology and consumerism. He is the author of the book Consuming Nature, Environmentalism in the Fox Valley, 1850 to 1950. He holds a bachelor's degree in history and physics from the University of Akron, a master's degree in history from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and a PhD in history from UW-Madison. In full disclosure, WPR's central regional offices and studios are based at the UW-Stevens Point at Wausau campus. Gentlemen, welcome back to Route 51, and thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Before we begin our conversation on the Port Forward proposal, I do need to acknowledge we received a media advisory yesterday regarding a news conference that will be held this afternoon on the main campus by current and former UWSP faculty and staff. The release reads as follows, quote, "Current and retired faculty members and staff will be releasing a letter to the Board of Regents of the UW system calling for the removal of top university administrators. The action is in response to UWSP's plan to eliminate academic programs and respond to an $8 million deficit." Bernie, Greg, would you like to comment?
Certainly, Rick. One of the really great things about universities in our country, and particularly at Stevens Point, is the fact that our colleagues across campus, our faculty, our staff, and our students are all free to express their points of view, their perspectives, and we welcome that. It makes for a healthier environment as a university where all opinions are respected, whatever they might be. But it's also worth noting that the group that's called the conference this afternoon is a local union. They are not the official representatives of our faculty, staff, or students. Our shared governance groups are not a part of what's being the this what the news conference this afternoon. But nevertheless, that said, these are our colleagues, and we want to hear what they have to say.
Greg?
Yeah, you know, I guess I would start by saying I have a lot of empathy for the concerns that some of our faculty and staff members are expressing, because they're worried about the same things that we're worried. They're worried about the changes that higher ed is confronting. I think one of the most important parts of my job as provost is to be honest with the campus and to tell them the truth. And unfortunately, a lot of the truth that I've had to tell with the campus is about how the circumstances of higher ed have changed. The operating model for higher ed that we still live with in regional public universities like ours came into being in the 1950s and 1960s, when the funding was different, the demographic pressures were different, the technologies of information exchange and knowledge were different. All of that has changed, and a big part of our proposal is grappling with that and looking forward and innovating, and that's hard for a lot of people.
Thank you both. Bernie Patterson, in a few words, how do you broadly define a new kind of regional university, and in what way could this proposal become a national model as stated by the university's November 12th press release?
Well, Rick, let me begin by just pointing out that if there was ever a time in our nation's history where our society needs graduates who are prepared to think critically, to problem solve, to innovate, to communicate clearly and persuasively, to understand the interdisciplinary nature of the world in which we live, and to recognize and resolve ethical dilemmas when they encounter one, that time's now. And so these are the characteristics and the traits of the liberal arts. And you get this by the study and the practice of the liberal arts. And it's these traits that we want to more greatly infuse into our professional programs. So we will be producing even better accountants and better nurses and better social workers and better teachers and better foresters in all that we do across all of our professional programs. It's bringing these two together in a way that few universities have successfully done in the past.
And Greg Summers, how does this proposal differ from past restructuring proposals, and how does it improve on past suggestions?
Are you talking about past proposals on our campus, or?
Yes.
Well, I mean, we're really trying to deal with, you know, let me maybe answer that question by answering your first question as well. Let me point to three concrete ways in which I think our region has changed and try to talk about how we're trying to restructure to address those concerns. One of the clearest things that's changed in recent years is that our students are so much more cost conscious than they used to be, especially since the recession of 2008. We're seeing real changes in student behavior. They want to know that they have a guaranteed pathway for a career that opens up options to them that's going to return the investment that they're making in tuition. And that means we have to respond to that by rethinking our academic programs and making sure that we're not just advising students in the same old ways, but we're really structuring our university around those career pathways. And so a big part of our administrative changes are designed to put our programs together in ways that clearly outline those career pathways and allow our faculty to work together to define those. A second thing that we know is changing, and the Chancellor alluded to this, is that employers in our region are no longer content to choose between liberal arts graduates and those with more technical training. They want both. They're demanding both. They need both. And so a major part of what we're trying to do is to put the liberal arts first in the core curriculum in general education, and we're trying to restructure to do that so we're able to deliver that kind of liberal arts core background to every single one of our students. And then finally, a big thing that's changed is the demand for higher education isn't strictly confined to the recent 18-year-old high school graduate. Demand for higher ed is actually increasing in our region, but it's primarily increasing among adult students with jobs and families who can't just come for a 3-credit class on Tuesday morning at 10. They need us to reach out to them to deliver that education in different ways, and not just through a baccalaureate degree, but different kinds of stackable credentials that help them to advance and learn and take advantage of the higher learning that we can offer.
So this really is a complete shift on the traditional form of a college education.
It's a fundamental rethinking of the operating model for regional public universities, right, in response to changing circumstances, yes.
In March 2018, students arranged a sit-in to protest the earlier proposal, which suggested cutting 13 humanities and social sciences majors. Bernie, you commended these students by saying, in quote, "If you're interested in students who are engaged, look here. If you're interested in students that feel comfortable in making their points of view known, if you're interested in what the product of a liberal arts education is, look here." How has student input influenced this new proposal?
Well, First of all, I want to say how proud I am of our students back in March, and that continues today. We have a great student body. They are engaged. We have an excellent student government association who are thoughtful, who are visionary, and who are engaged in these discussions. And they have been at the table at every turn. And so their voices are heard and listened to, just as the faculty and staff are. And they have all had an influence on the product that we see before us today.
Do you see that it's a seeming shift? For example, in March, student Ethan Cates said, "We feel expendable because of the original proposal back in March, and I want you to see how much anger and frustration there is in response to that plan." But in response to the current plan, student Braley Kerber, who was also head of the Student Government Association, said that student reaction to the new proposal has been far more muted. In fact, she said, "I think the college's restructuring is a really good opportunity for collaboration." What do you take away from this change in student attitudes toward and interest in the latest proposal? And either one of you, please jump in with that.
Well, obviously, when we go from the proposal of discontinuing 13 programs to 6, you could expect a positive result from that.
I think one of the unfortunate consequences of cutting anything is that the people who are most passionate about that thing that you're reducing are always going to feel like they've not been valued, and I think that's inevitable. It's not the case, but I think that's inevitable. But we've really done, I think, a lot, not just in the last 6 months, but in the last several years, to engage the campus in real dialogue about these issues and trying to highlight the challenges we face, but also to look for the opportunities to innovate. And I'm glad that our students are feeling like we've engaged them. We've had student representation on all of our efforts to collaboratively talk about these things, advisory committees and things of that sort. And I hope that they feel that their input and their opinions and their values are being heard.
According to the current document, this new proposal, in each college, in quote, "We propose eliminating our former largely discipline-specific departments in favor of new interdisciplinary schools, each focused on our strongest areas of professional education and career development." And Greg, you alluded to this a little bit ago. Is there an existing precedent for this kind of educational model?
Well, actually, to some extent, we're basing some of our restructuring ideas on our existing College of Natural Resources, which is itself an interdisciplinary unit. So we've actually looked quite explicitly inside our own university for a model. The College of Natural Resources has been around since the 1970s, and it is, in fact, an interdisciplinary unit where a lot of faculty experts from various disciplines – forestry, wildlife, water resources, fisheries, soils, work together to deliver a curriculum. They have some shared coursework that all of their majors take, but then the students branch out into disciplines. And that has proven, in my experience over time, as I've watched that college serve its students, to be a very effective and efficient way to deliver those kinds of career-focused programs to their majors. And we're looking to emulate that to some extent in the rest of the campus.
Bernie.
Yes. I would add, I agree with certainly everything Greg just said. But I would also add that over the last 200 years in our country anyway, the academy, and I'm speaking of higher education in general, particularly university and college level, has been very good at dividing the world up into a biology department, a chemistry department, a physics department, a history department, a business department, and an English department. But when our students graduate and go to work in the real world, the world doesn't exist that way. And when you're working at a major corporation, whether it's Skyward or Century Insurance or whatever it might be, you have to think about the world in a much more interdisciplinary way because that's the way it exists. And so the artificial structures that we have traditionally had in higher education don't really reflect the world that our students go to work in.
Now, you mentioned the success, Greg, of the CNR program and the interdisciplinary portions of that and how that all fits together. By expanding this to the entire university, UW-Stevens Point, what is your perspective on how this model will affect student and faculty recruitment and retention?
I would hope that it helps. You know, and I think there's certainly challenges that we're going to identify, but I also think there are real opportunities. I can give you some examples of that. Look, it's a true thing that every organizational structure both empowers but also constrains. And one of the things I've heard from faculty over the years is that our existing department structure sometimes inhibits innovation, because if a faculty member in one department wants to collaborate with another and wants to work on, say, an interdisciplinary curriculum, that's a very challenging thing to do on a campus that's divided in the ways that ours is. And so I certainly hope that in some ways we're able to overcome that with juggling our structure a little bit. But we also recognize that any new structure will create, you know, different kinds of boundaries that we'll have to navigate. One example from our campus that I think illustrates what we're hoping to achieve is the School of Design that we're proposing, for example. We simply didn't have the enrollment to continue to offer a full-fledged professional BFA in art. But we're looking to combine a number of programs in that area, continuing an art program in studio art, looking at graphic design, which is a pretty strongly enrolled program, and bringing in interior architecture to form a school of design in ways that we can build out from in all kinds of innovative ways that are much more closely aligned to the professional pathways that our students are seeking. I think students are going to find that empowering and exciting, and the initial conversations that have taken place among the faculty have highlighted a lot of challenges, but also a lot of real opportunities that we're hoping they can seize.
Rick, I would say to that, too, that before I was in administration, I spent 17 years in the classroom, and at one point I had 70 advisees. And so I've literally talked one-on-one with hundreds of students over my 42-year career. And they have always been interested if we have a major in criminal justice, or do you have a major in biology, or do you have a major in business. I don't ever remember a student asking me, in what department is that major in? Never, ever.
So in a sense, you're in the business of busting silos in a way.
Yeah.
You're bringing everything together.
Certainly.
Interesting. In the proposal itself, that the interdisciplinary schools would focus on professional outcomes aligned with the talent needs of the region's communities and businesses. What, in regards to that, what is the regional demand? What industries and forecasts influence the proposal, and what unique regional issues have been driving the university's economic decisions as it relates to building this out?
Well, I think you only really need to look at our existing enrollment, not just in the last few years, but in the last several decades. The strongest enrolled programs, and I'm not referring to specific majors, but areas of our campus, sometimes they're referred to as meta majors, but they're really kind of career clusters, you could call them. Those are clearly evident in our enrollment. We have very strong enrollment in natural resource management. That's always been one of our strongest signature areas. Health is a major regional concern. You don't need to go very far into, you know, community infrastructures, talking to mayors and hospital administrators and people who manage senior care facilities to know that health in general is a major concern in our region. Education is always one of our priorities. Those kinds of things are driving our enrollment and have driven our enrollment for decades. What we're trying to do is enhance those pathways and strengthen them so we're producing, you know, better prepared graduates in those areas that we know from all kinds of feedback our region needs.
Rick, we know that by 2035, which is only, 15, 19 years from now, Wisconsin will be short over 20,000 nurses. Short 20,000 nurses. Think about what our healthcare system is going to be like when you can't be admitted to the hospital because there is no room, regardless of how sick you might be. This is a huge issue this state has to come to grips with, and as well as our country, certainly up the upper Midwest. And we have to be able to prepare students to fill those jobs, or we're going to have a crisis on our hands.
Well, one of those things that you're doing right now, as it was announced yesterday, was that UW-Stevens Point has been working with the Area Technical College, Mid-State Tech, NTC here in Wausau, mm-hmm. and Nicolet up in Rhinelander to offer and put together a nursing program that is not only affordable, but it's also streamlined to mm-hmm. to bring students to the UW-Stevens Point campus, mm-hmm. one of the campuses, for mm-hmm. the first year working on the general education requirements, 2 years at a technical mm-hmm. college on the nursing technical skills, and then a year back at UW-Stevens Point to complete the baccalaureate. Is this an example of what you're looking towards for the future?
Very much so. We had the presidents of all three technical colleges on our campus, North Central, Mid-State, and Nicolade, yesterday. We had a signing ceremony, our commitment to working together to partner, in this case, in the preparation of nurses. But we are collaborating with the technical colleges on other areas as well, whether it's business or health care, other forms of health care. But you mentioned nurses. That's a good example of a program that is preparing students for a very particular career with particular skills that they have to have. But at the same time, if you're thinking about our current state of medicine, and that's all we have to work with right now is our current state of medicine, and preparing students for that current state. But we also have to prepare our nurses to evolve as medicine evolves, as the science evolves. And that means they have to be critical thinkers. That means they have to be collaborators. That means they have to be team members. This means they have to be able to adapt to the changing environment in which they're going to find themselves 15 years from now, 20 years from now.
One of the best things about that nursing collaboration is its flexibility, because it's not just dependent on training, you know, the high school graduate coming straight out of high school. If a student wants to treat it like a traditional four-year post-high school program, they absolutely can. They can flow right through this collaboration and receive the full baccalaureate in nursing right away. But they could also, train for 2 years with the techs, come back to us sometime later, 5 years later, 10 years later, to complete the baccalaureate degree. We've built in that kind of flexibility, and that includes the modalities of delivery. It's not just a face-to-face program. If students need an online option, that collaboration allows that as well. So it's really built for flexibility.
You're listening to UW-Stevens Point Chancellor Bernie Patterson and Provost Greg Summers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer, in for Glenn Moberg. When we return, we'll discuss the benefits of an interdisciplinary model in higher education, the proposal's effect on UWSP's new branch campuses, and the creation of two new centers to support the proposed restructuring. There's room for your questions as well. You can join us by calling 800-780-9742, 800-780-9742, or send us an email at route51@wpr.org. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with UW-Stevens Point Chancellor Bernie Patterson and Provost Greg Summers about the new Point Forward proposal for the university's future. The new proposal was released on November 12th. We want to hear from you. Call in with your comments and questions for our guests. Help us move beyond the talking points by calling 800-780-9742 or send us an email at route51@wpr.org. The Point Forward plan involves significant restructuring to create interdisciplinary schools, namely the College of Natural Resources and Sciences, the College of Professional Studies, and the College of Fine Arts and Humanities. How will combining colleges benefit students, and how will these new interdisciplinary schools benefit faculty scholarship, research, and retention? Greg, I'd like to start with you on that question.
Well, sure. I've actually heard lots of comments from faculty members over the years about the struggles to do interdisciplinary work. As the chancellor indicated, the world is pretty interdisciplinary. Our students are eager to jump out into that and to do that right away in the university. But we often struggle to do not just interdisciplinary teaching, but interdisciplinary collaborations that are more scholarly. And by putting some of those boundaries in play and rearranging the university, we're hopeful that we'll be able to create new curricula that actually respond more directly to those kinds of faculty interests and student interests.
Bernie?
Well, and I would think we hire new faculty, as people retire and new people come on, their interests will be more interdisciplinary, and their experiences in graduate schools are much more likely to be would have been more interdisciplinary. So they're going to be not only comfortable but eager to teach and work and learn in that kind of environment.
Now, this proposal does suggest that some majors were spared discontinuation because of faculty resignations and retirements. Even with interdisciplinary support, how will these programs function, or would they have enough faculty to function effectively with reduced staff?
Well, first of all, you said some of the programs were spared, not just because there may have been some retirements or people leaving, but because the faculty across the campus have been, in the last several months, much more engaged in conversations about how we can restructure, how can we do things differently. Just let me offer the English department as an example. Mm-hmm. After the March proposal, they really got in gear about how could we think about this differently, and they started talking about concentrations in business communications and concentrations in publishing. And, you know, we have a student press, one of only about five student-run presses in the country. It's only one of two university presses in the state. And that's a great hands-on learning experience. And they're looking now at how they can more utilize that in a greater fashion. They used to publish one book a year. Now they're going to be publishing three books a year. These are great hands-on, real-world experiences for our students. And this has been as a result of the conversations among the faculty, staff, and the students in the English department. So they represent a great example of how departments can reinvent themselves.
And I would just add that it's really important for listeners to know that the reduction in our faculty capacity, the number of faculty lines and positions that we have, essentially matches our enrollment decline. You know, as an institution rises and falls in enrollment, one of the fluctuating variables that we have to pay attention to is how many faculty members and instructors we need to meet that enrollment demand. We've seen about a 15% plus enrollment decline in the last 5 or 6 years. The reductions that we're looking at now basically match that percentage. And so we're really working hard to pay attention to that and to make sure that we have enough faculty to serve the student needs of the region.
How many faculty will we be eliminated? That you know of at this point in time?
Right. You know, if we combine the faculty positions at both the main campus and the branch, at present we had about 343 faculty lines. That's going to be reduced by about 42, I believe, something along that line. And, again, it's about a 13% reduction in total faculty lines.
Okay.
But that's not meaning that we're laying off 40 people.
That's correct.
Right.
Many of these positions are vacant. Mm-hmm. Are being vacated by retirements and people moving on. So the number of layoffs that may occur is a much smaller number.
Correct.
And how does this new point forward proposal affect the branch campuses and their faculty? With the broader plan includes offerings from the new School of Health and Wellness at the Marshfield campus and the MBA program on the Wausau campus, as well as the physical therapy program that you're working on. How do these programs reflect regional needs, and what will make these programs stand out from similar programs offered at other UW system schools like Oshkosh or Whitewater?
Well, I think that the branch campuses are actually a good case in point of the ways in which the region has changed profoundly and didn't really match our current structure. The demand for the associate degree credential that the branch campus has offered exclusively simply has declined substantially, and that's one of the reasons for the restructuring that President Cross suggested more than a year ago now. And so our job as a receiving institution for those branch campuses is to deliver more than just the associate degree, which the region really has told us through student demand isn't as highly sought after. And so we're going to be working hard to bring baccalaureate degrees, to bring, graduate credentials like the MBA to these communities, to bring non-credit opportunities, professional development opportunities for businesses and employees who are looking, again, for maybe not a baccalaureate credential or a specific credential, but are just looking for education. We're going to try to bring that into these communities in a much more engaged way.
And last month, we announced a major partnership with Marshfield Clinic Health System, and much of that will be initiated over on the Marshfield campus. And now we're in very encouraging conversations with Aspirus. They very much want to partner with us, and we need partners all over the region. An example would be the nursing program. We're already offering our nursing program in Wausau, and we're about to expand that to the Marshfield campus. So there are plenty of opportunities here.
Will there be expanded opportunities in the online degree programs?
Absolutely. That's one of the ways in which our campus is trying to move aggressively to meet student demand. We've heard actually just this past summer from many of our students who we weren't retaining from the spring to the fall, and we called all of those students. And when we heard feedback from them, their story was, well, I've got a job. I need to keep that job. I need to earn money. what I really need from you is an online class. And so we're certainly looking to expand the online offerings. That's another way in which the region is speaking very clearly to us, and we're going to work hard to respond.
Okay. Another key component of the Point Forward proposal is the creation of two new centers. Under UWSP's University College, the Institute for the Wisconsin Idea, and the Center for Critical Thinking. In the past, UWSP has created centers such as the Center for Leadership Excellence and Economic Development that was based in Wausau, or in the Center for Community Engagement and Experiential Learning at UWSP, which I don't believe exist any longer. What is the sustainability plan for the two new centers?
First, let me begin with the Center for Critical Thinking. We teach critical thinking, and I think in probably all of our classes. But how we do that varies greatly across the campus, and that's okay. But we have also on campus faculty who are specifically trained in how to teach critical thinking, and we want to take that resource and spread it across the campus to enhance what we're doing in all of our classes. But beyond that, how can we export that expertise to the K-12 schools, to nonprofit organizations, to the business world? When I sat down with the member of our philosophy department and she explained their idea, this is coming from the faculty, I was excited about the possibilities that I could see. And our faculty from the philosophy department have been sitting down now and having conversations with business leaders. That wouldn't have occurred a year ago. And I would challenge any university in this state to point to examples where their members of their philosophy department are sitting down and having direct conversations with business leaders about how we can help those businesses become more competitive in their own business and in what they're trying to produce, whatever their product might be. So I am very excited about this possibility.
The Institute for the Wisconsin Idea has been proposed as the home for liberal arts on campus. And over the course of UWSP's history, there have been different versions of general education, and that's been, you know, the case for a lot of universities. Student responses have been mixed. While humanities students interviewed by USA Today Network Wisconsin expressed strong support for liberal arts education, many in other fields question the need for humanities electives at all. How will Point Forward practices differ from past general education requirements, and what will make the plan more effective than past plans in integrating the liberal arts into career-focused paths in a meaningful way? Greg?
Yeah, thank you. That's one of general education is one of my passions and has long been pretty much for my whole career, and I think this is one of the most exciting things that we're embarking on. It's important, I think, for listeners to understand that 95% of our students encounter the liberal arts not through majors in those disciplines but rather through the general education curriculum. So it's incredibly important. And it's important not just because of that data point, but the general education curriculum is about a third of the credits that we ask students to take on their way to a baccalaureate degree. So it's typically around 40 out of the 120 credits. It's a major investment of their time, and it's a major financial investment. So we got to make sure we get this right. And as you indicated, many students who are not humanities majors but wind up encountering those classes just in the gen ed express a lot of disappointment with that. That has been true for years, and that is still true today on many college campuses. I think it's one of the underreported stories in higher education is the relative ineffectiveness of those general education curricula, not just on our campus, but everywhere. So this is a problem that higher ed has to solve. And the Institute for the Wisconsin Idea is specifically intended to go after that and to do a better job of serving students. One of the problems that plagues general education, I think, across higher ed is structural. That the first priority of most colleges and most departments is to serve their majors, and general education tends to be a third or fourth or sometimes fifth priority. And so we typically wind up with curricula that ask students to select from a large menu. They pick from, you know, a class in the humanities and a class in the sciences and maybe a languages class, take a math class. And we kind of hope that they learn and they connect the dots between those classes and they take away what we know to be beneficial about a liberal arts education. We sort of cross our fingers and hope. And oftentimes we don't even check to make sure that they've learned what we hope that they learn. So assessment is very important. We've made great strides at UW-Stevens Point in fixing those problems. We now know whether our students are learning what we expect them to learn. And in that assessment, we've identified real gaps that we have to address. We have to look those square in the face and fix them. And so the Institute for the Wisconsin Idea is meant specifically to do that. We're going to create an institutional home for general education. We're going to give them a budget and a staff, and we're going to make Gen Ed the first priority of our campus because that curriculum serves all of our students, not just majors in those disciplines, but it serves all of our students. So we want to make sure that the business major, the natural resource major, the health major, the performing arts major has the strongest liberal arts education that they can possibly get. And we're going to do that through this Institute for the Wisconsin Idea. The other piece of this that's very exciting is the outreach piece, because it's not just intended to serve our general education population of undergraduate students, but we're going to do some significant outreach around the Wisconsin Idea and the role of the liberal arts in serving the state. I believe deeply in the Wisconsin Idea. Education is a value not just in the classroom, but it's got to extend beyond the boundaries of the campus, and we're going to demonstrate that through this institute.
Bertie, I'd like to delve a little deeper into the critical thinking, the Center for Critical Thinking. It seems to be a great passion for you specifically. I know, Greg, you had mentioned in an interview in Wisconsin Public Television that critical thinking means many different things to many people, and there's no consistent definition in higher education. How do you teach, and I'm going to you, Bernie, how do you teach critical thinking?
Oh, if you ask any five faculty members that question, you'll get maybe 10 answers to it. So I won't even try to answer that in any sort of specific way, Rick. But what I do know is that we have faculty who are much more trained in that than I am. And what I want to do is support their efforts across campus in this new center.
Well, I can maybe jump in there. The specific technique that the faculty member the chancellor is alluding to uses is called argument mapping. And I won't go into the details because, like the chancellor, I couldn't explain it in enough detail. But it's basically a technique that surfaces the arguments that and the construction of arguments that are really central to understanding critical thinking, right? So if a student is in a biology class or a history class or an arts class, how do you, in a cross-disciplinary way, teach a fundamental, rigorous methodology of understanding and unpacking an argument? What are the components of an argument? And most importantly, does that argument persuade or does it fail to persuade in some logical way? If we can teach faculty in a cross-disciplinary way how to do that, you can then scaffold that into the curriculum. You can reinforce it not just in one class but throughout the curriculum, and you can assess it and actually demonstrate that students are learning that skill. And again, to the chancellor's point, there's an outreach component here too, because we have found that the business community is really interested in that same skill set for their employees. And again, they're not going to be looking for a 3-credit class, but can we as a faculty go out and help employees run better meetings and make better decisions and be more strategic in a corporate setting, in a nonprofit setting, in a healthcare setting? How do we apply those same skills in a cross-disciplinary way in the real world so that they're of use to people? That's going to be the role of this Critical Thinking Center. We're really excited about it.
Rick, I was talking to a relative a few months ago, and this person said something that I thought was really pretty far out there. I mean, it was over the top the point she was making. So I said, in a jokingly way, did you read that on the internet? And her response was, well, I sure did. our society cannot be built on what we read on the internet. That cannot be our guiding source of information for our political leaders, for our community leaders, for our educational leaders, for our religious leaders. We have to be able to produce students that can look at information and digest that information and analyze that information for themselves rather than just be told what the truth is or what the facts are. They have to be able to make a judgment on their own about the validity of what they're hearing.
That just begs the philosophical question, since the internet has their ability to think critically dissipated as a society.
Well, I think we see evidence of that.
Well, I don't know. We're drowning in information, certainly, but that's the university's job, is to not to teach students what to think, but give them the skills for how to think, and that's really the core of this project.
You're listening to UW-Stevens Point's Chancellor Bernie Patterson and Provost Greg Summers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer. Stay tuned as we continue our conversation about the UWSP Point Forward proposal and the university's role in Central Wisconsin. This is Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we talk with Chancellor Bernie Patterson from UW-Stevens Point and Provost Greg Summers about the Point Forward proposal. In full disclosure, WPR's Central Region offices and studios are based at the UW-Stevens Point at Wausau campus. 800-780-9742 is the number to call to share your thoughts with the Chancellor and Provost. We'll continue to take as many calls as we can during the time we have left. 800-780-9742 or route51@wpr.org is the email address. In March 2018 document, 13 majors were suggested for elimination. In the November Point Forward proposal, one of the majors that's still slated for elimination is history. How does eliminating history as an example, especially at a time when historical tensions and divisive rhetoric are reaching a boiling point, accomplish your goals for teaching critical thinking about regional, national, and world issues, especially if high-level courses in this field are eliminated by the cuts?
Well, I'll take that question. I am a historian, and I'm a member of the history department still UW-Stevens Point, and very proud to be. That's obviously one of the more difficult parts of this proposal for me personally, given my own background. But I think it's important for listeners to know that higher-level courses in history will continue to be offered. What we're hoping to do is to restructure the curriculum and allow students the opportunity to study history as part of an emphasis in an interdisciplinary major, and we have several different ways in which students will be able to do that. I think the key point for listeners to understand about history is that, again, 95% of our students don't major in 99% of our students don't major in history, right? Typically, our students are going to take their only history course or maybe two history courses as part of general ed. So we're never going to deliver the full content of history to the majority of our students. The challenge is to teach students to think historically, to understand the importance of context, to be able to gather the information in any kind of problem-solving context, whether it's in a corporation or a nonprofit or whatever profession they happen to do, or just as citizens reading information on the internet, to think historically about that information and to have the skills to do that. That's where we do that in general education. That's why it's so important to get those general education courses designed in the most effective way. The course that I used to walk into as a professor was U.S. History 1877 to the Present. That's a course that's designed fundamentally for majors to deliver the content they need to study in an upper-level kind of way. It's not designed for the general population of students, and yet when I would walk into that course, 98% of the students in that course were not history majors. They were there as their one and only one general education experience. And I got to believe there are better ways to design the course for that general audience, and that's what we're about. That's what we're going to try to do.
In its shift toward career-focused majors, Bernie, what processes is UWSB putting in place to ensure that curriculum can respond quickly enough to ever-shifting labor market and industry standards?
Well, that's been a concern, I think, from the business world, is that we have been slow to respond. It's been the nature of higher education. That's not anything unique to Stevens Point, for sure. But one of the things that we're finding quite helpful is to have advisory councils in various areas. I'll point to first our School of Business and Economics has an advisory council of a number of CEOs from Central Wisconsin, and they have been very active in working with our faculty about how that curriculum needs to be designed and delivered to produce the graduates that the business world needs. That's great. Another example is as a result of our partnership with area healthcare organizations, we're developing a healthcare advisory council that will include representatives from a number of healthcare organizations around Central Wisconsin to advise us in that particular curriculum area. Other departments and schools and colleges are going to be, I think, following suit. But I think that's probably our best way of making sure we're relevant going forward.
What sets UWSP apart from other higher education offerings in the state, especially here in the region? And how will the Point Forward proposal plan help UWSP distinguish itself?
I think it has to do with what we've been talking about for this past hour. It's how to integrate the liberal arts into our professional programs. Greg, a moment ago, was talking about history. We will develop better graduates from the College of Natural Resources, if they have a deeper understanding of the historical basis of how natural resources have been managed or not in Wisconsin over the last 100 and 150 years, they'll get that through being able to direct some of the resources that we have been at the history major to a broader audience on campus. I think that's one of the things that will really distinguish us from the pack.
What, Greg, if what happens if the Common Council votes this proposal down, especially in light of the spring deadline?
Well, there's a lot of different governance aspects. It's almost an impossible task to explain the complexities of shared governance at a university to an audience that's not inside of it. So there's not just one vote or one process. There's multiple governance conversations that will take place. Look, one thing I understand about our campus and our faculty is their willingness to collaborate to try to solve problems, and not just to solve problems in a reactive way, but to think ahead and think forward and to try to innovate. And the conversations that I've had with shared governance have again, demonstrated that. We were just meeting with our shared governance leaders this week to talk about the administrative restructuring component of this. And they want to explore not just the model that we put forward, but you know, two or three other ways of potentially restructuring to solve the same problems. And I'm excited about that. I'm happy to sit down with them and engage in that conversation. And I told the campus very clearly when we put this proposal forward that this was a proposal that we were going to discuss and really chew on as a campus community, and we were going to tear it apart and rethink it and, in the end of the day, come up with a proposal that might be refined in some way, but in the end will be better because of that broad input. And that's the process I'm looking forward to.
Bernie, it's the first day of classes, fall of 2025. What do you hope students, faculty, staff, and the community will wake up to at UW-Stevens Point?
They'll wake up to the fact that UW-Stevens Point is leading the state in how we deliver education, higher education in Wisconsin. They'll look to what we're doing in our classrooms. They'll look to the composition of our faculty. But most of all, they'll look at the skills and characteristics of our graduates and what they're doing and how they're succeeding and how they're leading in their communities and in their workplace and in their neighborhoods. It will be our graduates that tell our story.
Greg?
A similar answer. I would say that people will look at this university 5 or 10 years from now and not just see an institution that delivers a static higher education to 18-year-olds immediately following high school graduation, but we're in the community. We're sitting side by side with people solving real problems with our faculty and student expertise. We're delivering education in different ways, not just to residential students on campus, but at our branch campuses, online, in corporate, you know, boardrooms and HR offices and in healthcare operations. We're literally integrated in the community and solving problems, you know, in partnership with the region.
That's all the time we have for today on Route 51. I'd like to thank our guests from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, Chancellor Bernie Patterson and Provost Greg Summers, for joining us in the studio today. Thanks to Joy Ratch-Kramer for producing today's program and for on-air production. John Altenberg composed the Route 51 theme. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. Next week, Habitat for Humanity will be on our minds. Until then, we're heading out of town.